Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 199, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode199. So, we are talking about a couple of things today. First, Shakespeare. Two, environment. Oh, you like how I messed that up? First, two. I know some of you, I'm sure, were paying attention. Why did she say first two? Okay. First, Shakespeare. Second, environment. You got it. I know you got it. We're all in this together, right? Right. So when I'm talking about environment, I'm talking about where is it that Shakespeare is performed? Have you ever thought of performing outside with your students? Your first reaction will be, could be, no. But hang on. What happens when you take away four walls and you have to deal with the elements and people who might just wander through? You might say, Lindsay, you're not selling it. However, we're going to talk today to some folks who love the experience. They love working with students and performing outside. We're talking to some folks from a community theater in Hawaii who put on a kids' Shakespeare production every summer outside. And just a note here before we continue on, there's a gaggle of us today, three in Hawaii and me. Things might get a little crowded, but again, we're going to deal with it, right? I knew you would. So see you on the other side. Hello, everyone. I am here and I'm talking to, I got a bunch of people we're talking to on this podcast today, which is awesome. So I want to say hello to, we have Mimi and Kathy and Yvette. Hello, ladies.
Aloha.
Hey, and I always like to say for you guys to say where you're from, and you guys are in a very special place. Where are you?
Well, we're in Hilo, Hawaii.
Aloha.
On the big island of the Hawaiian Islands.
Awesome.
In the beautiful state of Hawaii.
Awesome. Are you guys locals or are you transplants?
I'm a transplant.
I'm local.
There you go. I've been living in Hawaii for over 20 years.
Oh.
And I've been here for 16 years, so we're kind of local now.
I think that's kind of local. I think that anybody over in a place over 10 years, I know sometimes locals don't feel that way, but I think any time over 10 years is you get to claim status, I think. Your residence.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay, and we are talking about, you guys sent some lovely pictures of a production of M-Beth, Allison Williams' M-Beth, and I just wanted to get you on a podcast to talk about your process. You guys performed outside, which I think is a unique experience, and I'd like to hear about your successes and your struggles with not just some Shakespeare, but outside. So I think that's pretty awesome. So let's start with the choosing of the script. What made you guys? You did this for your kids' Shakespeare program, right?
Correct. So actually, some bit of background is the Hilo Community Players has been putting on Shakespeare in the Park since 1978. So this was our 40th year.
Oh my God,
putting
that's awesome.
On a Shakespeare play in the park, and for the past 4 years, we've added to that Shakespeare in the Park experience a Kid Shakes program. So it's a lighthearted sort of Shakespeare-themed show that gets put on using the same set as the main stage show and using the same space and everything, but at a matinee time for a younger audience.
Well, that leads me to my first question. We'll get back to the show in a sec, but why did you decide to create a Shakespeare for Kids program?
Well, it was the brainchild actually of the lady who brought outdoor Shakespeare to Hilo, Jackie Pualani Johnson, who was a longtime theater professor at the University of Hawaii here in Hilo. Local girl, went away to college, came back and wanted to bring this outdoor experience to the community of Hilo. So she started in 1978 with the production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Then the Hilo Community Players has been around since 1938. So we're one of the oldest community theater organizations in the state. And so for our 75th celebration of being the Hilo Community Players, she came up with this idea of putting on a kids show as part of our Shakespeare. And so we've been doing that for the past 4 years.
That's awesome. Well, what a great way to introduce a generation to Shakespeare. It's a great doorway, I think. Yeah.
That's what Auntie that was Jackie her thought too.
The whole idea is that she wanted to reach the kids, reach the keiki, and teach them about Shakespeare and Shakespeare in the Park. And so it's been a great way to really entertain the kids and tell them, you know, a little bit about what Shakespeare's about.
Awesome. Okay. So what was it about MBeth that fit your program?
Well, I am an elementary school teacher and I love, you know, theater is my passion. I love to direct little plays with my class and with children. And throughout the years, I think that the amount of plays and the diversity of plays that you can find online has definitely grown. And there's been a greater pool of richer texts and richer plays that you can pull from. But I've read a lot of plays online and this one stuck out to me in particular because it was just so extremely hilarious. I mean, I sat down and within the first minute or two of reading it, I was just, you know, cracking up. And the whole time I was reading the entire script, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just the funniest little play I've ever read. And I think that the kids as well as the adults would really enjoy it. And, yeah, so it was just because it was so cleverly written and just a really funny show.
And when you showed it to students for the first time, did that did your instinct come true that they were able to connect to it right away, or did it take some time?
No, definitely. I was very pleasantly surprised, not surprised, but pleased to see that everyone felt the same way as I did, that it was just such a funny show. And, you know, there's so much adult humor as well as little jokes for the kids too, that it's just, it reaches everyone.
And the cool thing about our Kids Shakes production that we do is it's not just children that are performing. So our auditions are open to all ages. And so Mimi had a range of ages. Some of our veteran actors from Shakespeare were also in it, as well as some newbies, little yeah. kids who are for the first time getting their foot in the door, which is sort of the goal, one of the goals of our Kids Shakes program.
Our youngest actor was 12 and our oldest was 84.
Oh my God. That's awesome. Oh, I love that. Well, and yeah, what a great mentor. It's sort of like, it's a little, like a little mentorship built in, eh? Because you've got younger actors who have just sort of are doing this for the first time, seeing what other actors do, and which can, I think that can sometimes be the best teaching ground for them.
Definitely.
It's been really cool to see the Kids Shakes program grow as well, because I've been involved with, as I said, the Hilo Community Players have put on a Shakespeare production every summer since 1978. I've been involved in 16 of those over the year in some capacity. And so there's a group of us who every year you see us on stage or around the productions. And so people know you're Shakespeare with the Shakespeare and all this. But it's been really cool because there's been about two of these young people who have been involved in every Kid Shake show for the past 4 years, which is really, really fun to see these children sort of now they're teenagers and they're still involved in doing the Kid Shakes. So that's been
family.
Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you've hooked them.
We've hooked them.
Okay. So
I'm sorry, one of the actresses that was in Kathy's show, the main stage show, even said to us about the whole experience. She said, it's just like camping. And it really is, because there's so many of those camping elements that are involved with using an outdoor space.
Awesome.
Yes.
What a wonderful segue. You must have known I was going to ask about that. So so let's talk about what it's like to, first of all, let's talk about rehearsing. Do you rehearse outside?
Yeah.
Yes, bring
okay.
the shine.
All right, so talk about that. What is it like to rehearse a show in the great outdoors?
Well, we always want all the actors to come prepared no matter what the weather is, we want them to have sunscreen and sunglasses and hats and umbrellas and all of that, just to be prepared. And in Hilo, it's like, it's funny because we always say, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes, it'll change. Because we are the rainiest city in the U.S., which is...
Seattle doesn't want to admit it, but we know we're humble in Hawaii, so we let them think they are.
So, but we'll have brief rain showers, and most of the time they just passed after a few minutes. But we've also, you know, had shows where we've, like last year, we canceled an entire weekend of our show because we were in the middle of hurricane season, and there was just, you know, buckets and buckets of rain. So it became a little bit impossible. But
yeah, last year was challenging because we had a hurricane threatening to come through, and we had to go basically take the set down.
Tie it all down.
The hurricane thing, goodness, went over us. But then we went and set it back up the next day and put on a show the next evening.
Another question I have about performing outside or rehearsing outside is that what's it like in terms of distractions? Because there's not a space where everybody can sort of be contained in. You're in the outdoors, and the outdoors itself could be just a wonderful distraction. How do you deal with that?
There's a lot of interesting things that happen. I mean, you know, we're right in downtown Hilo, so there's all kinds of people, lots of diversity, and people will come up and just right in the middle of rehearsal, ask us, what are you guys doing? And so it keeps things interesting, but it also is very positive in some ways because there'll be, you know, people sitting on our bleachers that we have set out for the audience. And so they, you know, the rehearsal time becomes a time where the actors are on stage and actually performing for a real audience. So it's good practice in that sense. There's a lot of noise pollution because we have a lot of motorcycles and loud music that comes past. Airplanes, yeah, we're right in the path for the nearby airport. So there's an extreme amount of sound pollution, but you know, we just deal with it. The actors learn how to hold for noise, and we just have to be really patient. But I think the audiences, when they do come, they understand the challenges.
And I gotta say, in Mimi's production of Macbeth, there was only one actor that I ever had a hard time hearing, and I know she worked with him to try to get him louder because we don't use amplification. We're not rich enough to put on, you know, we're a nonprofit, very poor. We, one show feeds, the gives us the money for the next show kind of organization. So we don't have any fancy sound equipment like Central Park folks do. So we have to use the amplification that God gave us. So, but those other kids projected really well. And there was just that one who you couldn't quite hear him. But everyone did well with all the noise.
It's really interesting these days because I remember a time in watching any show where there was no such thing as artificial mics. No mics. And now it seems that that's the go-to move. So I think that whenever you can teach any actor, student or otherwise, how to use their voice and how to project their voice and how to deal with noise pollution. I think that's an amazing skill. What's your go-to projection exercise?
The one that I like. Well,
or Mimi, whoever.
Yeah. Well, there's several. I like to focus on the breath and breathing and have them breathing through the diaphragm and then just doing a ha and supporting a ha and then more support, more air and doing a ha ha, just sort of getting louder and louder with more support. In our park where we perform is King Kalakaua Park. Kalakaua was one of our, one of the Hawaiian monarchs, and he's got a statue that sort of is in the one end of the park. So we always tell our actors, you're performing for King Kalakaua. He has to hear you, so project so he can hear you. So that it gives them a visual kind of thing. If he's going to hear me, I got to be really loud. But I don't know if you have another projection that you like.
Yeah, there's a couple different ones that we use. We like to use when I say we, I'm talking about my stage manager as well. He, Bernard Villa, he likes to use an object that was up close. a middle object, and then like a building or something that's farther off in the distance. So we'll say, you know, say a line from the show. I don't know, whatever the line is. If you say it, you say it as if you're reaching an object that's maybe 5 feet away, and then 20 feet away, and then 30 feet away. So they can see the difference between reaching an audience member that might be closer, you know, and then farther away. The one interesting thing that I wanted to add about the audio, though, with our stage and the set that Kathy designed, is it kind of became kind of like an amphitheater, the way that the back of the set was. You know, if the audience, if a performer was looking towards the back of the set, their voice could kind of bounce off the back and it would carry into the audience. And I thought that was really interesting.
It was a happy accident. When I designed the shape of the set for, because the set was designed for the main Shakespeare in the Park show, which is our evening show. And this year was our 40th year. So we were doing a variety show, I guess, of Shakespeare. We're doing the Best of the Bard II, scenes, sonnets, and soliloquies. So it was, we did 14 scenes from 7 plays and 7 sonnets. So it was this sort of patchwork quilt. So that's sort of the idea of a patchwork quilt. We also did it with various multiple directors for different scenes. So I wanted to design a set that had possibilities. So we had different levels. And it's something that was different. So this L shape with the flat, when we got it there, it became almost like a bandstand, or I can't remember what it's called, you know, like a band shell,
yeah,
where the sound actually was projected out towards the audience, which was a wonderful happy accident that I'm going to explore more in my next set design for the park.
Another vocal exercise that I recently learned, and I unfortunately wasn't able to use it with my cast, is here in the islands, we do have the risk. We run the risk of having tsunamis. So there are tsunami sirens that will go off at the first of every month. And so the tsunami siren activity is you're kind of winding your arm like you crank a toy horizontally. So you start low. How does this turn out? Tsunami siren. Down. So next time, yeah, I definitely want to use that one because it sounds like a tsunami.
It does. You learn about the resonance, how to use the different parts of your head and your chest for resonance, which is really cool. We have for past shows had vocal coaches come in to help as well.
That's awesome.
So,
and the last one that I have is one that I learned from going to the University of Hawaii at Hilo, where you take the vowels and a consonant. So you'll say like T, te, ti, tai, to, tu, and you try and get the actors to, you know, really push the breath out from their diaphragm. And you can do consonant sounds like CH or, you know, any of the others.
That's great. Oh, you guys are like, you guys over-delivered. I love it. It's wonderful. And I was just thinking, you know, we've got lots of folks who are in tornado areas, and I bet you that tsunami exercise would just, it just walks right over to tornadoes too. Very applicable.
Love it.
So I want to go back to the notion of the set and applying Embeth to that. But I also, just because we're talking about this notion of projection and how that is very important in an outside venue, what did you do, Mimi, in terms of physicalization? Embeth is a very larger than life play, and did you have to incorporate that in terms of being the physicalization being larger than life, just to reach to your king there, reach to the back of a space, because the audience may not be so close.
Yeah, I did a little bit of that. I worked really closely with the witches. The witches, I cast 3 teenagers. They're all ages 14 and 15. And so they're experienced actresses. They've all done other work, but I just really wanted them to embody the character of the witch. And I used a very stereotypical kind of witch to be the inspiration. It wasn't, you know, the traditional, you know, the real stories, witches. I don't want to say the title of that play.
No, that would be very good. Don't say that.
So we did a lot of, I did some activities where I just rehearsed with them. I had them practice using different voices, using voices in a lower register and a higher register. And, you know, we practiced our cackles. We practiced, there was one time where we thought of witchy kind of animals and what are witchy kind of animals. And we thought of cats and snakes and lizards and other kind of creepy crawly things. And I just had them kind of try to embody those animals and walk around like they were those animals so they could see how their bodies might move as witches and kind of relate it to their characters.
I think that's a great idea. You know, just anything that you can get them outside of their bodies, you know, like their normal, the normal way they use their bodies.
Yeah. And actually, we have a theater program from the Honolulu Theater for Youth based on Oahu. And they have some great ideas about how to use your body. And sometimes I steal their ideas because they really help you to focus on making a circular angle with your body, make a straight shape with your body, make a flat shape, you know, think about levels and different things like that. Because a lot of the young actors don't really think about the extent of how they can use their bodies when they're acting.
No, and that whole notion of extension too. Like, I find a lot that student actors they you know, the elbows are like attached to their sides, and you know, everything just gets very not insular, but straight up and down. So I think you're totally. I love the idea of creating like shapes and shapes that not force them, but encourage them to extend themselves, which must be perfect for performing outside. Okay, let's talk about we got this set. So you've got this set, which is for another show, but has these wonderful colors. And as you were talking about the patchwork quilt, I was like, oh, that show could fit with Embeth, because there's like the patchwork quilt of all there's the guys in the foam hats and the different eras. So how did you deal with costuming the show, knowing that you were working on a set that was for another show? Did you incorporate the costumes with that? Did you go very base with the costumes? How did you incorporate the place you were working on with the show?
Well, you know, hindsight's 2020, right? So I used some costume pieces that I probably should not have used, and I'm trying to do a little bit of repairs and taking care of those costumes right now, because we work in a very damp space. You know, it's consistently wet and muddy in the park. So I had like a pair of suede shoes that I probably should not have used, and some velvet fabrics and things like that. But I tried to keep it all very colorful when thinking about costumes. We used some plaids, of course, to bring in the Scottish elements of the show. I kept it. I think that it's a really, you know, typically I'm not a costumer. It's not my strength. I'm an actress. I haven't directed too many shows, but I felt like since this show was so playful and so fun and so modern that you could kind of do almost anything with it. Mm-hmm. So I brought in elements that were more historical, but then also a lot of, you know, very modern pieces into the costume. So the witches were all in kind of rich velvety kind of fabrics. And then and Beth, we actually found a real kilt for him to wear. So that was fun. Let's see, what else did we have? We got some funny hats for the soldiers, because there's the one scene in the show where they're like, what are you wearing? And they're supposed to be wearing styrofoam crazy hats. So that's, of course, an element where we could use something very modern. But then also there was a traditional, I think, World War II very heavy wool coat, full-length coat that we had one of the soldiers wearing also. So I had to be very careful with that and make sure he knew not to wear it if it was pouring rain. We had to take care of it.
We're a small theater community, and none of us are rich. Of the different organizations, we borrow from each other. So Mimi borrowed from the university. She borrowed from other theater groups in town and per people's personal sort of items. So, and we do that all the time.
Sure, that's okay. I think creative limitations are actually sometimes make the best theater, you know, like when you have all the money in the world, sometimes it looks like it's just money as opposed to a specific vision or just problem solving. You know, that's all theater design is, right? Is problem solving.
Yeah,
that's true.
And we've got an excellent theater community here on the Big Island. It's not anything unusual for one theater company to go to the next and say, hey, do you have this or that? And can we borrow it? And everyone's very open to sharing what they have, their resources. And so it's wonderful.
Because we're generally sharing the same talent as well.
Yeah,
So we've learned over the years that you kind of got to get along because, you know, the person who's acting in your show today is going to be acting in somebody else's show next week. You know, so we try to get along.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Little community, it's all good. And so as we're wrapping up here, I wanted to hit on something you said, Mimi, that you've got more of an acting background, you haven't directed a lot of shows. So what did you learn from this experience? What did you learn from directing something outside, directing a little bit of a flavor of Shakespeare? What did you learn and what can you take away from this experience?
I think that I really learned how important it is to ask for help. And I actually didn't do that great at that. I'm not one to ask for help as a teacher. I'm kind of like, you know, the one that I try to do all the work and I, you know, I don't delegate as well as I should. My boyfriend, the assistant manager, assistant director and stage manager, ended up helping me a lot. I did ask for some help from some of the actors, you know, occasionally. Of course, we have to haul the props in and out of the shed on a daily basis for every rehearsal and every show. So that's a huge job where we need a lot of help from people. But I feel like, you know, directing is just, it's a job where you have to wear so many different hats, and you, in order to be successful, you have to really just be able to rely on a lot of different people and ask for help.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah. It's hard for me to ask for help, but I'm learning.
Well, that's actually another aspect of, you asked us earlier about performing outside. Where we perform is basically, it's a small little park in downtown Hilo. We have our setup, we have bleachers, we have our lighting and lighting trusses. But we can't leave anything out beyond our sets and lights because it will probably not be there when we come back. So we have to sort of set up and strike each after each performance. So meaning you take everything except the set out of the park, basically, the set and the lights out of the park. So any set pieces that you have, all the costume pieces, all of the props and everything that you've set up backstage, and everything has to sort of be struck every night and set up every night.
Thank you for defining that a little bit.
Yeah, so it adds, it's a little different than most shows. So when folks sign on to be in Shakespeare in the Park or Kid Shakes, they're signing on to also be a pseudo techie because you're going to be helping with breakdown and setup at each night too.
Mm-hmm. Well, what a great learning experience, you know, like to show actors that there's also that other side, that technical side, and you must be incredibly organized. You know, you just can't throw a costume piece somewhere because otherwise if it doesn't get put away and like put exactly where it needs to be, who knows where it'll end up tomorrow. You guys must have had checklists for days.
Yeah, because it'll end up on the homeless guy walking through the park in the middle of your performance if you're not careful.
Hey, but you were helping out with the tech side, right? What was your experience in working on this?
For me? Well, I was you're talking about a vet?
Yeah.
Oh, hi. I'm like shaking my head to everything you guys are saying. I was a production assistant for the nighttime show, and being an owner of a F-150 truck, also the one that hauled things from the shed back and forth.
So you were the most important person.
That's correct. We couldn't set up or strike if she didn't show up because she had the truck.
Yeah, I'm the one with the truck. But everybody actually in the evening cast, just like how Mimi had described, you know, what may have been a difficulty with her cast because you had a difficult time asking for help. For some reason, we just got the cream of the crop of our cast this past year, and everybody was experienced in being a techie as well as being a seasoned actor. So it worked out really well. There wasn't much that we had to say. In fact, the last weekend of our show, it took us 18 minutes to break down everything and get it back to the shed after the show was done at 10.
Don't get me wrong either. The kids and the adults in my cast were amazing too. Yeah. Like, I know, especially two of our youngest, a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old. I mean, they were there every day early, helping, you know. They always asked, do you need help with this or that? You know, they worked really, really hard. So,
and actually on the final day, after our last performance,
They were there the entire time.
Yeah. Meth. I've been using both ways.
So on Sunday, just the other day, we struck the set from the park.
Less than an hour.
In just about an hour and a half. And several of the young people from MBeth came, as well as the cast from the main show, I guess, the main stage show. And we had it down and put in the truck and ready to be hauled away and just about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah.
So in those teenagers and young people worked really hard. Mm-hmm. They really did like the pieces that had to be like stripped down and broken up into smaller pieces because the wood had already sort of rotted from being in the rain for a month already. They liked the demolishing of the flats. Yeah. we're separating. So
it's kind of cathartic. Yeah.
It is. A little bit.
Yeah, it's not symbolic at all. Okay, last question. What piece of advice would you give to a theater or a teacher listening and thinking about, oh, you know, I've got a courtyard in my school. I've got a space that I could perform outside. Maybe they don't have. We have lots of folks who have no theaters. They have no lights. They have no anything. And performing outside might be an option for them. What piece of advice would you give someone thinking about rehearsing and performing outside?
Well, I just, to borrow a saying from a very, very famous company, just do it. the theater arts are one of any of the performing arts particularly, but I have a special part in my heart for theater arts, is one of the only multidisciplinary fields of studies that are there. You can teach all of the academic areas through the process of putting on a production.
Mm-hmm.
You can teach measurements. You can teach math and figuring out how many yards of material need so you think about the math that's involved in putting the set together. You think about the science involved in rigging the lights and learning how to even create lights. If you don't have any, how can you make that? So there's the science, let alone the language arts that are involved in learning the script and learning the genre of theater.
And the problem solving skills that come along with acting.
Exactly, because like you said, problem solving is the biggest part of putting on a theatrical production. No matter who you're putting it on for, or where you're putting it on for, you're always constantly having to problem solve. And so there's the ways that theater and the theater arts can feed what goes on in a classroom is priceless. So just do it.
Well, I don't think that could be said any better. Mimi, do you got something to add? That was awesome.
I don't know if you have anything else to add as an elementary school teacher.
Yeah, well, I think that if I were to give advice to an elementary school teacher, and I haven't done a performance outside with my own classroom students, but if I were, I would definitely say a delegation of jobs. You know, everyone have one specific job and be in charge of that one thing every day, but also be aware of your surroundings and what's going on and see where else your help might be needed in order to get things going in a smooth and efficient manner. And like Kathy had said before, after practice, things get to be really quick. Setting up and breakdown happens really fast. And then also, I guess, just being open to the possibilities of there being distractions and times where you're going to have to problem solve, like when, there's rain or the elements are kind of interacting with what you're trying to do outside.
I got to say the rain showers that we did get this year during our main stage show main stage show. When it would start raining, when the Tempest scenes would start, I thought that was priceless.
Perfect time. Yeah.
So
it's almost like it was planned.
The downpour, though, during the Henry the Fourth Part One, not so timely because they're in a tavern, but it's pouring down rain. But the Tempest ones worked really well when it would rain.
Awesome.
Yeah, and the witches.
The witches, when it would rain.
The witches, hail. And the last witch, weather looks fine to me, but it's raining. Yeah. Weather does not look actually fine.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much for talking to me today. It was lovely.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Nice talking with you.
Thank you, ladies. All right. Before we go, let's do some theater folk news. It's play feature. It's time to feature a play. So we've been talking about Macbeth by Alison Williams. And if you are ever looking for a doorway to Shakespeare, Macbeth is the perfect door for you. In fact, all of Alison's plays are excellent that way. Shakespeare's story, some of Shakespeare's language, some modern language, and most importantly, modern context. For so many students, Shakespeare feels, looks, sounds old, out of touch, and it's just not true. You can't tell them that, but it's really not. And I'm not saying that Shakespeare is easy, but the stories are so far from out of touch. Here in this play, the Scottish play, the whole idea of power and power corrupting, well, I would say that is a pretty much universal story, if there ever was one. So if you can get beyond the barriers with Shakespeare, if you can find a doorway, you're going to engage your students. You're going to have a much more fun and fruitful time with any of his plays that you choose to look at. Okay, so just to prove my point. So we're going to look at a little section of Macbeth. And the first thing to know here, humor. Find the doorway, find the funny. And two, this is very specific to Macbeth, and actually all of Alison's plays when she's dealing with Shakespeare, gender flexibility. So in this case, we don't have a King Duncan, we have a Queen Duncan. Duncan is the King of Scotland, and that's what Mr. M wants to be. And in this case, she's not interested in dying or leaving the play. She's got something to say about it. We don't have a King Duncan. Duncan is the King of Scotland, and that's what Lord M, Mr. M, Mr. Macbeth, that's what he wants to aspire to. But we've got this, let's have this little scene here that deals with Duncan right after the first battle. We have a battlefield, dead bodies. Queen Duncan and two soldiers survey the field. Well done, boys, a great victory. Aw, thanks, Queen Duncan. Now we can return home and pass out some honors. I think I'll make Macbeth Thane of Cawdor. He was pretty brave. And get back to ruling Scotland. Long live the Queen. Long live me. Well, for about another three scenes, Your Majesty. What? You aren't in the whole play. Impossible! I'm the ruler of Scotland, commander of thanes, protector of the people, leader of the army, mistress of justice, verity, and temperance. I dominate the play from start to finish, beginning to end, and I have a great idea for a franchise opportunity. But isn't the play about the Queen of Scotland? Kind of, but you'll see, your part is more of a supporting role. I will support the entire play as Queen of Scotland. Queen Duncan, you die in Act Two. Inconceivable. I have an army to protect me. Get me fleance. Runs away. Act Three. Banquo. Murdered. Act Three. All my sons. They sleep through your murder and run away after your death. Oh, this is terrible. You, go tell Macbeth he's Thane of Cawdor. You, go tell Macduff to meet me at Macbeth's castle. I'm sure I'll be safe there. That's Macbeth by Alison Williams. You can find the play at theaterfolk.com. You can also find a link in the show notes. theaterfolk.com/episode199. In the show notes, I've also put a link to all of our Shakespeare parodies and adaptations. Find that doorway, my friend. Finally, where can you find this podcast? Go to theaterfolk.com/podcast, and there you'll see we are on iTunes, Android, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. That's theaterfolk.com/podcast. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.